Hey, Trojan fans, it's time to get into the huddle with the Peristyle Podcast. The Peristyle Podcast is your weekly ticket to USC football and recruiting news. Don't forget, you can download the podcast 24/7 at our new website, peristylepodcast.com. And now, here's the host of the Peristyle Podcast, USCFootball.com publisher, Ryan Abraham.
Hello, Trojan fans. Welcome to episode number 284 of the Peristyle Podcast. Today is September 2nd, 2013. We've got a big show for you this week on the Peristyle Podcast. Dan Weber was in Hawaii with me. We'll talk to him a little bit later on the show. We got Coach Harvey Hyde here in the first segment. We're going to answer your questions about this USC football team, which is now 1-0. If you have any questions or comments, drop us an email, podcast@uscfootball.com, or you can call us at 206-888-6755, or go right to peristylepodcast.com and leave a voicemail right on the webpage. Without further ado, let's jump in with Coach Harvey Hyde. Coach, what's going on? How are you doing?
Well, I'm doing great, buddy. Great college football weekend, and we're not done yet. We've got a great game tonight, Florida State Pitt. Then we start countdown for the second week of college football. I think there are a lot of wow games when you look at the North Dakota State win and the Northern Iowa win and some of these wins that are out there in college football. You can never just assume you can win a football game any longer. There's parity everywhere, and if you're not ready to play, it just doesn't happen.
Yeah, Eastern Washington Tech or something, or Eastern Washington A&M beat Oregon right. State. Who knows? That's kind of crazy. All right, well, before we jump into all that, I want to also welcome everyone in and say Happy Labor Day. It is Labor Day here, so Happy Labor Day. We are still working, Coach, on Labor Day, which kind of sucks, but, you know, we got to do what we got to do. And I wanted to thank our sponsor, Southern California Tickets, sctickets.com, or give them a call, 1-800-888-7287. If you need tickets for anything, still you got the red-hot Dodgers, the not-so-red-hot Angels, and, of course, now we have USC football tickets, three home games in a row. If you want to check out any of those, you can go to sctickets.com and jump in there and get some. And, Coach, before we get going, I guess we'll get going now. Want to get your thoughts overall on the game. We have some specific questions, but, you know, maybe get your thoughts of what you saw out there in Hawaii.
Well, I think one thing I want to mention about the Pac-12, first of all, there was a statement game with the University of Washington against Boise State, the 19th ranked team in the country. I thought Washington really looked sharp in their victory. I don't think Boise State is the same team it was a couple of years ago. But 38-6, they completely dominated. Then again, I want to say, as you mentioned, Eastern Washington's 49-46 beating of Oregon State. So you have statement games, you have wow games. This is what college football is all about. It's exciting, and we're right in the middle of it. And I know you want to ask me what I think about the Hawaii game, which I'm about ready to tell you. But remember, I mentioned last week, too, Ryan, that I'm going to be on Twitter. Do you remember that?
Oh, before we get into that, Coach Harvey Hyde is on Twitter. What's your Twitter handle, Coach?
It's @CoachHarveyHyde. And what I'm going to try to do, and Ryan, I don't know if you noticed it or not, because I want to thank you for being a follower, but after every quarter during the game, I sort of tweet out what I think of the performance. Real short, you know, you're limited to what you can say. But I give a little brief description of what I think after the game, the third quarter, halftime. And then also during the week, I give updates on what I think about different issues that might be happening. And I just thought people might want to follow along. So I wanted to get that out there. And thank you very much, Ryan, for being a part of it.
Oh, no problem, Coach. So if you want to follow the coach, @CoachHarveyHyde on Twitter, and you want to follow me, it's @InsideTroy. We'll work on Dan next. He has one, but he doesn't ever use it, so we'll try to get Dan on there so everyone can have one.
We got to get him going. Yesterday in the studio on the Trojan Brunch Show, I got JJ back, Johnson. He says, if you're going to do it, Coach, I got to do it. He says, if you could do it, I got to do it, he says. And then Pete Arbogast says, oh, my gosh, Coach, I can't believe it. He says, I got five followers. He says, I better get started, too. So, you know, I'm bringing everybody up to date on the modern age of electronics and all these things that are going on, too.
Sweet. All right. Well, now we know that you're out on Twitter. We can get your thoughts that way. What are your thoughts right now on how USC performed at Hawaii?
Well, let me put it this way. In your opening game, you always got the jitters, and you never know what to expect. And of course, all the quarterback controversy that was going on before the game. I shouldn't call it controversy. I should just say discussions on who's going to start or who's going to this and that. And it's always great to get a win. You know, whenever you can get a W in an opening game, you sit back and you say, "Whew, we got this win." Then you start thinking about how during the game, how embarrassed you get at times and how you feel about great plays. And then you feel about, man, we got a lot of work to do. And when I look at an opening game, you say, well, what do we look good at and what do we need to improve at? So I'm sure that Coach Kiffin had a staff meeting immediately following the game, or maybe he gave him the evening off because it was a late game. At least it was a late game here on the West Coast. And they met in the hotel the next morning or on the plane all the way coming back. And at least I would have, as a head football coach, gone around my staff and said, all right, what was the pluses of this football game? What were the negatives of this football game? And we would discuss it as a staff, offensively and defensively, and share our thoughts. Because if you don't allow your assistant coaches to talk and go up to thoughts, they feel like, well, you're not going to listen to me anyway, and maybe you're not going to listen to them anyway. But you want to hear what they're thinking. And if you don't give them a chance to vent, like we vent when we do this show, and like our callers or followers or listeners vent when they call in, it doesn't happen. So if I'm going to vent, I guess I'll just tell you my thoughts on the game and how I felt. First of all, I think there's several issues you need to work out. I wasn't at all impressed with the offensive line's performance. And I know it's their first game, and I know it's a young offensive line. Don't get me wrong. You've got Turek, you've got Wheeler. Wheeler starting his first game. You got Marcus Martin in the middle. You got Martinez, who's a senior. You have Walker, who hadn't played guard before. You got Kevin Graft, who has been a three-year starter. And you say, well, shouldn't we own the line of scrimmage better? Shouldn't we have pass blocked better? Shouldn't we have done a lot of these things better, especially under the tutorage and of Mike Summers and what he was expected to get his team to our front five to perform. I know Mike's not happy. I know Mike says, yes, we had a pretty good game, but we got to get better. Yeah, you do. You have to get better if you're going to compete. Because I would have to say the University of Hawaii, from what I saw after the first series or two, I said, wow. Offensively, wow. I mean, Graham hadn't played in the football game since high school. And he couldn't throw the ball, and yes, he was putting pressure on him. So, you know, that wouldn't they weren't going to score in any way. I'm surprised they scored. In fact, they scored in five different ways, if you want to look at it. They scored a touchdown, a safety, a field goal, and a two-point conversion. So you scored four different ways, and they only got their touchdown on one of the final plays of the game. So, you got to get better on the offensive line, both run blocking and pass blocking. You know, you allowed a safety, and it's not all the line's fault. I think it should have been a three-step drop. If you're going to throw the ball, you can't go back to a five-step drop and throw a ball, because you don't really have that much time, especially the way Hawaii was pressuring. And they got some inside charges there. One of the tackles let a guy go or didn't maintain his block, and he got sacked, and it was a two-point conversion. I think earlier in the game they could have built some confidence in Cody Kessler and the offense, but when they drove down there and they passed up the field goal and went on fourth and four, and then they didn't make it. I think the first time a quarterback's in the game in a new offensive year that when you get a chance to score, you take the three. And they passed on the three, and they didn't make it. The next time down there, they took the three. And Adari was really hot. In fact, he was my most valuable player of the game, especially with his 52-yarder. And may I say, at the end of the first half, I love their time management and getting themselves into position to get that 52-yard attempt and make it. You can hear my dogs in the background, so I apologize for that. I got a household of dogs. My kids' dogs are here. Everybody's kids are here.
It's Labor Day, Coach. It's okay. We're working on Labor
Day. That's all right. They're saying hi to everybody out there, and they want to get on the air. So I think the offensive line needs to get worked on, and I would agree, and I think Summers would agree if he listens to this podcast, and I don't think he does. He doesn't care what I have to think, but he's a good line coach, and I think they got to work on that. They've got to get a little bit more athletic, to be honest with you. I think they've got to run the stretch play a little bit more. They have more success running outside with that stretch than they do inside. They got to get better line splits and get some seams in there where the backs can run, at least I think. And I thought their backs, Justin Davis, I thought he played well. Matthew Madden played well. And let's don't forget that I think the most valuable run of the game was not the 34-yard game by Madden, but Buck Allen's power run down there that got them the touchdown at the end of the game. He just ran over people. And I think Buck is an outstanding football player, number 17. He doesn't get the raves that he should, but he had an outstanding summer camp for the Trojans. He was sort of the unknown player or soldier, as you can say, in the past. As far as the receivers were concerned, they've got to concentrate more on catching the football. They were thinking about making the big play rather than catching the football. They were thinking about running with the football or what dance they were going to do in the end zone rather than catch the ball and take the possession right there. And sometimes players do that when they don't catch a lot of balls. They expect to make big plays, and they weren't concentrating. That's concentration. I thought Cody Kessler made a nice pass to Aguilar for their touchdown, a lot of touch on it, and I thought that was a nice play. Wasn't real happy with the way they used the field or spread the field, especially with the way Hawaii was coming after him with three-step slant patterns, hit your tight end on curls, have hot routes. If you see they're coming, you know, hit the tight end, just read the linebackers, dump it to him, let him go down the middle of the field. They used an across route there later in the end of the game to Lee, and he got a nice run out of that in game. They did not attempt to use much of that during the game whatsoever. So it's easy to sit back now and critique. It really is. But I think you've got to think about and have a plan during the game that if they do this and they load up over here, then you can't cover the other side. And I think you've got to set your formations and see how they're planning on covering those plays or those formations, like players said or somebody was saying they were always where the play was going to be. Then you better go back and check your formation tendencies, and you better find out what you're doing offensively, but somebody else knows more about your offense than you do then. So I think you better check on that. Thought the running backs played well. I thought Davis had an outstanding game. He was my runner-up player of the week. Kadari offensively was my player of the week. Scored 13 points, and I thought had an outstanding game. So offensively, I could keep going, but defensively, I thought they came after you. They had fun playing defense. It was great to see the Trojans having fun playing defense, getting after you. I thought as a freshman starter, Ruffin had a great game. Kennard had a great game. Williams and Uko, what can I say? They're great players. Bailey had a great game from being injured and not playing much because he was injured. Linebackers played well. Front seven had a great game. Safeties, I think you've got some safeties, but your safeties are going to have to start helping your corners. Ryan, you've heard me talk about this. How many shows have we done when I've talked about the corner situation? And if you're going to go after people, you got to have corners, but if you don't get there, it's all over with. And SC lost their starting corners, Brown and Seymour, and no one knows what happened with them. What happened as far as the injury report, they might have gotten shot. I really don't know, because no one knows. There's no report. So, you know, I don't know why that's been a popular thing now. I don't understand what it is. You don't tell anybody what's wrong with anybody. But that's the way it goes. But we know that they didn't play, and you saw Shelton come in, and he just couldn't cover that guy. In fact, Graham could have hit a couple of others, and I hate to say this. It's a terrible thing to say because you don't have a quarterback. Hawaii didn't. But if Hawaii would have had a quarterback that could hit a couple of those passes a couple of times, the Trojans would have been in a real battle for the football game.
Yeah.
I tell you, the guys were open, and it was scary. It really was. So the corner situation continues to be a concern of mine, a huge concern, because you're not going to stop Arizona State, Oregon, and with the speed of the receivers. And I like all these receivers. They're defensive backs. They're nice kids. Chris Hawkins, I don't think, got in the game. Torrin Harris, he's a senior, I believe. He played. Shelton, he's a freshman. They're talking about moving Josh Shore to corner, but, you know, you got to run 4-4, 4-5 to play corner today, especially if you're going to play man. You've heard me in the spring, and Ryan, how many shows have I told you, why have great athletes watched the game? I don't know how many shows I've told you, but Blackwell and Flournoy are great athletes. They're watching the football game. You got Darius Rogers as a backup receiver. I mean, why not let those guys, I said in the spring, take them over there and let them be a corner? If I'd have been at SC when Marquise Lee came in, he'd have been my corner. I've told you that 100 times. Everybody said, how could you do that? How could I do that? You had Robert Woods and all these other great receivers. Get your players on the field. And I don't know, but I think those kids would have started off being a defensive corner in the spring. They'd have been real happy. Because remember, corners are making more money than receivers now in the NFL draft.
Right.
You got to be able to cover. And you've heard me talk about this. And I just think you're going to have to play zone. Do more of that. You got to more contain now because they're going to spread you out. If you watch the Washington State game, this kid, Holiday, he throws the ball really well, quickly. Mike Leach, you've got to hope that team's fatigued after going to Auburn and going all out and almost beating Auburn and then coming home and then having to come to the Coliseum. You got to really hope that that trip hurt them because they were sharp. Auburn, I don't know how good Auburn is, okay, so, but they had to go to Southeast Conference country. That's a little bit different than going to Honolulu, Hawaii.
Right.
But Hawaii never quit. And I told everybody before the game, they'll never quit. They're great kids. They play their butts off. Football is a big thing in that state. They have a lot of pride. And I think they came out of the game okay. Norm Chow, I don't think, liked the final touchdown. That's why he came back and went for the streak and went for two and went for the onside kick. Norm doesn't get mad. Norm just demonstrates it by what he has to do. But now you're asking me, would I have gone for that touchdown? Absolutely, I would have gone for that touchdown. You've got young players who need to play. They practice all fall. They practice all spring. You weren't trying to pour it on. You were trying to become a better football team. And I think Bunk Allen demonstrated that. So I don't want to wander go too long, but I do want to address the quarterback situation because I know everybody's going to ask me that question.
Well Coach, we actually have a question about that. So maybe
why don't I just stop here?
Yeah.
Because I can just keep going.
You know,
we could end the show on Tuesday.
All right. Well, here, let me put a question. We'll try to go through some of these quick because we have a bunch
time
of questions.
Out. Let's take a TV timeout, a radio timeout, a podcast timeout.
All right. Here we go.
Hi, this is Mike from Lantana, Texas. Fight on Trojans, good win. Would love to see us have only one quarterback. I think if we have two quarterbacks, we don't have one, and that's a problem. We need one man to lead the charge. Who do you guys think it should be after looking at the first game? I was really excited with the running backs. Do you want to know, are we just going to redshirt Ty Isaac, or is he going to actually get to play? But it was great to see Trey Madden back on the field. And he did just a great job on the offensive side as he always had done on the defensive side. That guy is just money when it comes to being a football player. Great to have him be a Trojan. Today's a great day to be a Trojan. Fight on and God bless.
Mike, I love your enthusiasm. I really do. It's great to hear you call in, and please continue to do so. You're a prideful guy. I can tell you're a real Trojan. Ty Isaac, don't get me into that. I don't understand why you'd burn a redshirt year on the final plays of the game. I just don't understand that, but that's not my decision. They did that a couple of years ago, if you remember, with Farmer. Cost them a year of eligibility. I don't know. So that'd be a good question in a press conference. And I don't go to press conferences, and they're probably happy I don't. because, you know, Ryan, I'd ask these questions. I feel these are decent questions that, you know, people should know. But as far as the quarterback situation is concerned, there's got to be a decision made. I think maybe you can go one more game.
Well, Coach, actually, Lane Kiffin said he made a decision. He's just not going to announce it. So he was in a little press conference yesterday.
Oh, really?
And told him, so sorry about that. Yeah, he just with the beat writers, it's not like a real big deal because he hasn't announced who it's going to be. But he said he's made his decision, but we're not going to find out until Saturday.
All right. So that's... Now, see, these are the type of things. Never mind. I'll just move ahead, you know. because you know it's going to get out. Because the number one guy that's going to be taking over better be running the team during practice.
Yeah.
He better be taking every snap with the first unit. That's not hard to figure out, because that's why you make this decision. You make this decision to become a better football team. You have better rhythm. The players look at you in the huddle. They know you're the number one guy. You're going to make the plays. You're going to be the leader. You're the battery of the engine. So, you know, it's going to get out. So I would rather step up as a head coach and say we've made the decision because of this. And the other guy's taped his ankles and be ready, and he's ready to go in the game. And it's the way it is right now at this point. And you move forward. It's like that's what head coaches are for, making decisions, not only off the field or on the field, but during the game and not during the game. And that's what you got to do. So we'll wait and see who is going to be the starter. And you'll be telling me, I'll be reading about it in a day or two, okay?
All right, here we go.
But I'm glad he named one then. I'm glad he had one, because that's what my point was going to, Ryan.
Yeah.
My point was going to, you've got to have rhythm. You've got to know who the guy is. Hey, listen, you've evaluated for 6 months, okay? Who are you kidding? All spring, all summer camp, now a football game, and you're telling me you can't decide who's the guy. You got to decide who the guy is. The only way he will fool us is he's going to come out and say, I'm rotating both of them. That's the only way he's fooled us, if we think he's named a starter and he's named them both, okay? So, and I wouldn't be a bit surprised, okay? So we'll wait and see what it is. I thought you can't evaluate. It's difficult to talk about the game and evaluate them, really, because they're all in different type of situations with different type of plays and drop passes and the different things. And sometimes in passing situations, tackles don't block and you get sacked or whatever. But if he's made that decision, then we'll let him make that call and I won't get involved and you won't ask me who I think should be it.
Let's go to Andres. He wants to know, how worried should we be about the offense going forward? Is Hawaii that good or are we that bad?
Well, I think Hawaii will be the worst offensive football team you play the entire year. Not that I'm trying to put down anybody, but they had injured players. Their top running back was out. They didn't have a quarterback experienced guy came back. The receivers didn't show me any great speed. They had lost their best defensive lineman. They play with a lot of pride, and they get after it, and they gamble a lot on defense. I tell you, I respect Norm Chow so much. I just respect him. He's such a gentleman on and off the field. But he didn't have the personnel to play against USC, obviously. So, from now on, the Trojans are going to be challenged. I mentioned Washington State. Washington State and Mike Leach, he put the ball in the air 65 times. 65 times against Auburn, okay? This game starts at 7:30. You'll be leaving the Coliseum at 1 a.m. in the morning. This is going to be a long football game. And he throws a lot of quick routes. He just throws and throws and throws. I think he only had 34 yards rushing against Auburn because he didn't care. Loves to throw the ball. Have you ever watched him? He has his play, his game plan is written on a napkin, like that when he had breakfast before the game, he wrote down what his thoughts might be. But he knows his offense so well that he knows what he's trying to accomplish that if you don't stop him, you can't go after him and stop him. He'll eat you up with those bubble screens, quick screen slants. He'll eat you up. I might say that, you know, he'll force you to rush three and drop eight. You think I'm kidding you, especially to help your corners, because you're going to have to cover those zones. But this kid can throw the ball pretty well. I was impressed, and the receivers are gutty kids. You know, they don't know what their speed might be, but they're gutty kids. And they'll come to the Coliseum non-intimidated. They just went to the Southeastern Conference. They won't be intimidated. So SC's going to have to bring their game. So how good is Hawaii? They're probably the B team on USC's schedule.
All right. That's probably not an encouraging word for USC offensive fans there. Let's move on. Here's a voicemail question for you, Coach.
Hey, this is Kevin from Culver City. And I just saw some footage of Lane Kiffin speaking after the win at the Hawaii football game. And I saw how disinterested the players were in his after-game speech. My question is that how important is it that the players believe in their coach to have a winning season, because from what I saw, none of the players really interested in what Lane Kiffin had to say. Thank you very much, and fight on. Thanks a lot. Bye.
Well, I'll tell you, when I was a head coach, if they weren't interested in what I had to say or not, they listened. Okay? There wasn't any moving around. They were down on one knee. I was in the middle of them, or I had them in front of me, and I looked at them. And if a guy was looking to the ground, I'd ask him what he was looking for. I think it's very important to communicate with your team. I think it's very important to look them in the eyes and tell them the truth about the performance, who they are, what you thought of your performance, because you're going to tell the media and everyone knows in the locker room themselves if they're happy or not satisfied with their victory. The number one thing you always say, we got our W. But, you know, there's ways of saying you get a W, but we still got a lot of work to do, too. And I think that it's important that your team believes in you. They're willing to follow you. They're willing to die for you because you're willing to die for them. And they've got to have that feeling. Remember, if your team knows that you love them, you've heard me say this, they'll do anything for you. So my feeling is you've got to have command. You don't even tell them. You don't even have to tell them. You teach them that from the beginning. Even after a win or sad when you lose, you don't look at the ground. If you played your best, the hell. The other team's better. But you still keep your head up and you pay attention to your coach and you look him in the eyes. That's what I think of it. I think you've got to have respect, yet you have to show respect as a head football coach back to your team and members of whoever you're working with that's a part of that franchise that you're ahead of.
And then one last one before we let you go, Coach. Earl in West L.A., if that's okay, you got time for one more?
I got time for one more.
All right, here we go. There's very much a different team than last year because we could run the ball well. Trey Madden, Justin Davis, and Buck Allen at times all look like the second coming of Marcus Allen. Wow, I don't know about that. He said, did I really see three running backs that good? Coach Hyde, please bring me back down to earth. We could not throw worth a damn, but we could sure control the ball on the ground. That's Earl in West L.A.
Well, it's good to have running backs, and it's one thing you have to do is believe in the run, and you can't get away from the run. You know, all great football teams run the ball, okay? You run the ball, you get people in the box. It opens up your secondary because the safeties have to worry about the back breaking up the middle or breaking somewhere. They come up and support. And remember, defensive backs do not like to tackle especially corners because they're supposed to cover. So that's why I'm suggesting run the stretch more. The toss play hadn't been successful, I don't think, because I think the backs are too deep and you're not hitting the toss area to the outside fast enough, and their receivers cannot maintain their blocks that long. They're coming off the blocks. But that's just my opinion. So I think you do have three great backs. I do. That's why I mentioned earlier, as far as Isaac, why would you burn a redshirt year? You don't even have red. You got DJ Morgan. I think DJ Morgan probably is the fastest back of all of them. I think the only thing lacking as far as the running backs is you don't have a burner. What I mean by a burner is a sprinter that's playing running back, a guy that if you don't cover him and he gets through the hole, he's gone, man. He turns on the afterburners, and he's history. Now, I haven't seen these guys have to do that yet, so I shouldn't judge that early. But I'd like to see that demonstrated shortly to see if anybody can run him down, especially if they have the angle on him and the guys run away from him.
I think Buck Allen can be one of those guys, Coach. He's
I hope.
Yeah, we'll see, though. All right. Well, thanks again. And thanks for taking
Let me give me out my Twitter again.
Oh, yeah. Go ahead. Promote
it. I'm big on this, baby. I'm big on it now.
All right, Coach.
You can reach me at Coach Harvey Hyde. That's Coach Harvey Hyde. Join me in the huddle, okay, guys? Join me in the huddle.
All right. Thanks again, Coach, and everyone else. Back in 30 seconds, we are going to talk with USCFootball.com beat writer Dan Weber.
Fight on, Trojan fans. We're all very excited about this season. My name is Louis Tanguay, and I'm the managing director of Circle Marketing. Like USC, Circle Marketing has a long track record of success. Ours hasn't been on the football field, though. We have been very successful in helping the small businesses of America get the kind of marketing strategy and support previously only affordable by large companies. For example, by going to CircleMarketing.com, you can view our portfolio, read our case studies, and see how we were able to increase business by 90%, grow social media followings by 10 times what it was when we started, and how our websites and marketing strategies have helped our small businesses reach and exceed all of their marketing goals time and time again. So, come visit CircleMarketing.com today, read our case studies and testimonials, and see what we've done for other small businesses like yours. Then, contact us and find out what we can do to help your small business too. Circle Marketing, the company that fights on for your small business.
We are back here on the Peristyle Podcast. Now we're joined by USCFootball.com beat writer Dan Weber, who's going to talk about the game. We were both over there in Hawaii, and there's actually been some recent developments. The game was on Thursday. Sunday, there was a press conference. We got a lot of questions from all you guys, like I said earlier in the show. D.C. and Culver City, Kevin in South Orange County, both were talking about the quarterbacks, Dan. D.C. wanted to know about, is one of them going to magically step up? And Kevin in South Orange County talked about what Florida did, Will Muschamp's Florida team did when they had Brantley and Driscoll, won their first four games, and then they went 7-6 to finish where there was two quarterbacks. But since they wrote those questions, Dan, there's been some news on the quarterback spot. Maybe we can kind of share all that, and you could talk about your thoughts.
Well, I would tell you who is going to be the quarterback, but that would ruin it for you this whole week. So I'll just say, you know, wait till Saturday, and you can find out when Washington State does. It was interesting, Lane. He does his opening comments on his Sunday night call, and then the very end he said, but I've got something to tell you. We do have a quarterback, and we've decided, and I'm not going to tell you, and you'll have to wait till Saturday. Now, it's a little variation of what he did last week, but I don't know why that's the story, and I don't really think. I know Lane said that, you know, he just didn't want the guy who didn't get the – he didn't want us to keep asking him every day, number one. And secondly, he didn't want the guy who didn't get named to have to feel like, people were saying bad things about him or he didn't – that's not going to happen. I think, you know, one of the things that the way they went after it Thursday on offense – gave you almost ammunition to say bad things about both of them to some extent, and that was not right. I thought that was the worst, certainly the worst Cody Kessler has looked since last spring, their worst single day. They looked tentative. They looked unsure of themselves. They gave him almost nothing to really show what he could do. He gave himself the one opportunity when they were on the 19, and he recognized a look that he was looking for, that Hawaii was in, and he immediately audibled to Aguilar for the touchdown. So you sure would have liked to have seen the ability to do that more. That was a 19-yard, really well-thrown pass, and yet I know that people look at, and say, well, he isn't throwing it very hard. Well, you don't want him throwing it very hard when, 90% of them are five-yard passes into the flat. Throwing it hard doesn't exactly work in that situation. I thought that really made the quarterbacks not look very good the way they went about it on offense. It was like, again, I said it was two different teams. The defense comes in there and probably played faster than we have seen them all year, and they've been playing fast. And they really turned it loose and got up to game speed in a way that, we hadn't seen them all together playing like that. And they hadn't always been healthy and hadn't seen guys like Sua Cravens in there all the time. We knew what potentially they could do. And then we watched, the offense, and it looks like they're going slow motion. And, still they're, getting false starts and really not recognizing what Hawaii's going to do and on stunts and blitzes and things like that, and just not picking things up and putting themselves into trouble. I think the third what, the 3 of 14 third down conversions was just horrific. So two different worlds in terms of offense and defense Thursday. But, they know what they need to work on. Looks like they're going to – they've obviously picked a quarterback, which they have to do. You got to, make one guy. I mean, neither one of them benefited from Thursday's game because they only got half the reps. So, one of those guys is your starter. And they really need to get all the reps with the first team. You just got to do that. And now Gary Klein of the LA Times says that he has a source that it's Kessler. So we'll see. Last week the early reports were that it was Wittig, and as the week went on, it turned out that more and more that you heard things it was going to be Kessler, and that turned out to be correct. We'll see how this goes, it's going to be another interesting week where we won't be in there, but we'll be trying to, as we have patented a new process. It's called the sweat stain analysis, where you try to guess who's starting or who's playing a lot by how sweaty their practice gear is as they walk by us after practice.
Maybe Lane Kiffin will dump Gatorade on everybody that didn't play a whole lot in practice, so you can't tell.
Hose them down as they come out.
All right, well. We don't want to overanalyze the quarterback situation. Obviously, we'll find out on Saturday, according to Lane Kiffin, who the next USC quarterback is going to be. But we have so many questions to get to, Dan, about other aspects, too. I wanted to get to some of those. Here's a voicemail one for you.
Good morning, Chris from San Pedro. Two questions for Dan. First off is, how can our two tackles play so bad against a team like Hawaii? And what does that portend for the rest of the season? The other question is, given the fact that our secondary is probably going to get torched this year, what do we do about the quarterback spot? Because neither one of those guys looked like third-year players. They couldn't hold a candle to any one of the number of freshman quarterbacks who played last year and did great. Neither one of them looked better ready to play, and I'm just wondering how that can be. Two top-line recruits, neither one of them looking like they had the confidence to play. And I thought Kiffin gave them both a good opportunity to play. And I thought the play calling was pretty decent, but they really just didn't perform. Thanks. Might be a long season, boys. See ya.
Wow.
Dan, before you go in, my bad on that. I wrote down cornerbacks. I thought he was talking about cornerbacks, and then he went on to talk about the quarterbacks. We talked about the secondary getting torched. So my fault on that. I didn't realize there would be more quarterback talk there.
I would say that Chris sounds like a really, really cool observer of college football. I probably disagree with all three of those. I would say that I think Lane didn't help them, I don't think, with his play calling. I thought that I would have liked to have seen them do more of things that we had seen them do in the 3 weeks prior. And just let the tackles block. I mean, I think when you have a brand new left tackle and a 3-year starter at right tackle, and they're both having problems, maybe the problem is they're doing stuff that they're just not as up to speed as you'd like them to be, in terms of recognition. And obviously, I mean, I think Kevin Graff, I believe, and it was hard to hear Lane's comment last night, but I think the gist of it was that Kevin did a pretty good job blocking, and I think if you notice, they had some pretty good runs off the right tackle. So everybody saw that, he got beat to the inside on that safety, and that was he set up outside, guy went inside, and he ended up pushing the guy into Kessler. It was an odd call, considering they hadn't really run any drop back passes until they get to the 1-yard line, and then they set up in the end zone, and one guy gets beat, and that's it. I thought they weren't that disturbed about Wheeler. I think they thought Wheeler held up strength-wise and size and toughness and all that. There are recognition and identification issues, and I think that really has to be handled by the coaches. They have to do a better job of preparing them for the offense that they're going to run. And if that means cutting down on the number of plays on the play sheet, cut them down. Get rid of them. Cut down on the complexity. Just go out there and say, our athletes are going to be able to beat your athletes. So as far as the cornerbacks, or I think you said the secondary is going to get torched. I guess this was the same secondary, what, you know, four interceptions I caught the other day. So I don't know. Maybe they won't get torched. They've got three pretty good safeties, and you know, playing right now in the nickel, and another one, Demetrius Wright, I think, who can jump in there if they decide to move Josh Shaw. And I think you know, having Anthony Brown and Kevon Seymour go down early, you know, that hurt. And so now you're playing backups right away, and at corners. And that was that wasn't the game plan. That obviously wasn't the way they wanted to go. But I would give them some an opportunity to see what happens with the secondary. I think, you know, it's a work in progress. But not the safeties. The safeties, these guys can play, and they are playmakers. And it's something that we haven't seen for a while. And this is how I think Pete built his defenses, with playmakers. He started, you know, you start with Troy Polamalu, and then you get a Matt Grittigood, and that's not even the secondary, although a lot of the plays Matt made were in the secondary as a linebacker. And then Lofa Tatupu and guys like that, they had a defense that he had playmakers. And this defense, he has playmakers. So I just think I would not probably, you know, jump to a conclusion right away on the cornerbacks or even the secondary overall. As to the quarterbacks, I thought they were limited in ways that it wasn't their fault. They, you know, why you get to the first game and they look worse than they did in the first day of spring. Again, that comes back, I think, to the, you know, coaching and selections, the things you put them in and allowed them to do. I mean, how do you take Cody Kessler's legs out of the equation? How do you not let him make plays, you know, moving? How do you, you know, I was stunned by the offensive choices. It seemed like an overly cautious approach. And if I'm, you know, one of you guys out there and all I know about them is what I see in that first game, I might come to the same conclusion. I think it's an overgeneralization that is taking one game and turning it into the kind of conclusion that's not supported. For example, I think one of the things is there are times you maybe do need to trust us, because I think everything we said about everybody on defense and what we were seeing turned out to be true. I mean, you know, when we talked about Sua Cravens and what you could look for him, or what Lamar Dawson was going to look like playing on the weak side, or how Hayes Pollard perfectly fit at Mike linebacker, or the way Devon Kennard was bringing it, all of those things proved to be true. So if our observations are that the quarterbacks are definitely improving and looking pretty good and able to play at this level, that's probably true. The fact that they weren't the other day, I don't think goes back to the quarterbacks. I think it went somewhere else. And hopefully that is being resolved, and that's one of the reasons that they have already picked the starting quarterback, and they're going to, they've got to score some points, I think, to beat Washington State, and they know it. And I think, Lane sometimes, you know, rises to the occasion. Last year when the Oregon game came along, he knew, you know, he couldn't be conservative, he couldn't be cautious, he couldn't be careful. And at least they went out and scored 51 points. I could have only held them under 62. I'm kind of optimistic that they have seen what went wrong in the Hawaii game. But I would not be harshly critical of any of the individual players at this point in time. I just really wouldn't.
All right. Well, you mentioned someone that, and we have a really quick question, maybe the shortest voicemail question we've ever had. So we're going to play that one for you right now.
In a month, basically.
How good is Sua Cravens?
He's really good. I mean, nothing's too big for him. It's interesting. He's not in any way awed by anything. He expects to be that good. I mean, he's got a feeling about himself that he belongs out there. It didn't, he was thrilled But I don't think it was really a big surprise to him that he got that first interception on a play where he went from one side of that guy to the other side of that guy before that guy could even move to the football. You know, Sua was – he has – for a guy that he's right now at 220 pounds, he has an ability to widen his body out and to explode quietly. I mean, he just does things in a different way for a guy his size than you've ever seen. He's got a flexibility about him. He knows where the ball is, and he can be really good. Now, again, you know, this is his first time. He wasn't here in the spring. This is his first college game, and he'll probably make mistakes. And I think they showed later on. You could see a play where he was where Hawaii gets deep on the corner, and he didn't get over in time. And he didn't take the right angle, and luckily Graham overthrew the ball. But so there will be those things happen, and that's, you know, I think we're going to have to expect that there will be times where he might not quite get there because he's either trying to make a play, you know, not afraid to, you know, come up inside and certainly big enough to do that, and he could play linebacker and he knows it. He does have some special skills, and especially ball skills and especially closing skills. And that's the thing you like about these guys. When you put Deion Bailey back there, who has the special, you know, closing skills on the football, and Josh Shaw, really, you know, as he was the other day with the interception and the return, and Deion with his interception. And you've got guys that really have ball skills and can close on the football. And Sua is just kind of amazing. He does not look like a freshman. He could walk out this weekend with any NFL team in America as a starting safety just by his presence and his size. Now, experience, not even close. You know, he'd be 5 years younger, 4 years younger than anybody. But if he walked out there, he wouldn't look like he didn't belong there. I mean, he just looks like... He looks less like a freshman than almost any freshman I think we've seen in a long, long time.
Okay, high praise there for Sua Cravens, and thanks for that super short question. Here's another one for you, Dan, another voicemail.
Hi, Ryan. Frank from Sacramento calling. You know, I think during the Hawaii game, much more needs to be said about the play of the running backs. Trey Madden, Justin Davis, a couple hundred yards there, and I think they're fourth and fifth behind Silas Red, DJ Morgan, and Buck Allen. So we got to say that when those guys are all back, we'll have a tremendous running game. Thanks.
You know, I think that would be true if you had a game that where they had 120 minutes on the clock with 60 minutes on the clock. You know, it kind of becomes a zero sum game. You know, if Silas Red gets more carries than, you know, Trey or Justin or somebody else doesn't get them. You know, I think, you know, Ty Isaac would have loved to, you know, gotten more of a shot Thursday. So, and everybody who, you know, gets to see him, and again, we can, you know, toot our own horn, but we weren't kidding you about Buck Allen. You know, he got four carries, but, one of them memorable, you know, where he, you know, trucked that other number 37 for Hawaii. And, you know, knocked him head over heels. So I'm not sure how the numbers work in USC's favor other than, you know, in terms of depth-wise for injuries. I thought the number of carries was really good for those, you know, Trey and Justin. I think Trey needed those carries. It was wonderful seeing him out there without a knee brace on the first time. And, you know, I think once they get, you know, get down the, you know, the line blocking, and once the, you know, they get the calls right and all of that, I mean, he can be a hammer. I'm looking forward to, you know, when they run Wildcat. It wasn't in the game plan. I was, you know, kind of wish it would have been with Trey. But Justin Davis has a maturity about him so that he doesn't, you know, outrun his blocking or try to go, you know, what, you know, try to, you know, take the, you know, the scene before it develops. He has a maturity in the way he approaches, you know, hitting a hole that you really like. I thought they got that pretty well in terms of a rotation. And it's kind of hard to see how you would change that no matter what. I mean, you know, we don't know Silas Redd coming back from Florida from Dr. Andrews, and we don't know what the procedure was. It was obvious to me last week as he's walking off the field, and you just looked at him and you said, something's not right. He's not getting better. And you could really tell, he was walking in a way that, you know, his knee, there was an angle about his lower leg and ankle that you just said, something's not right here. So, you know, they're optimistic and positive about, you know, where that is for him. But, you know, I just think, you know, right now the rotation's pretty good. I don't know that they need any more numbers. They just need to refine it, I think. And they need to get rid of the bad plays. I mean, there's no excuse for having, you know, the kind of running plays that get blown up the way some of them did against Hawaii. I know Hawaii was doing some different things, and they take chances. But they were sound fundamentally. They had, you know, what, 9 starters back on defense. And I think they're actually not, you know, I know a lot of people say, oh, they're not going to be any good. They weren't bad. That was a pretty decent, you know, when you watch all those games over the weekend, there are a lot of teams that can't play defense. Hawaii looked like they might be able to. They certainly tackled pretty well, aggressive as heck. I thought their new defensive coordinator did a really good job with Hawaii.
All right, let's go to Mac D in Vancouver. He said, was the bruised shoulder on Marquise Lee his left during the game when he caught the ball multiple times and ran down the left side of the field? Lee kept the ball in his right arm and did not switch to the left. If it is he not 100% when he thinks he could fumble the ball like that, much like Silas Redd last year with his stinger?
You know, it's a good question. He certainly didn't transfer it on the fumble. He kept it on the right side. I don't know that was a reaction to because his injured shoulder was his right shoulder. So he actually was keeping the ball in the shoulder where the injury was, I believe. And he got hit on that side. But it certainly didn't. He's pretty open about, you know, telling us how he feels. And he certainly, I mean, I asked him, I said, can you put your, you know, you're fine? He said, yeah, I'm fine. I said, can you put your arms, you know, up for me? And he went straight up. And so, I mean, I think he got busted really hard the first injury of the summer, but the second one, I don't think it was an issue. I mean, there were some shadow issues and light issues, and he's probably trying to do too much and thinking too much, and that ball's coming down, and I know he's thinking about yards. I think there's more of an emphasis on yards after the catch, and I know he's probably in midair thinking, where's pressure coming? And I'm near the sideline, but not only do I have the first down, which way can I, you know, spin move and maybe take it in? He's trying to score every time. And I think, you know, that can work against you a little bit. I think he probably, if I had to guess what happened exactly on that play, he probably took his eye off the ball a little bit because the ball was coming down right in the, you know, in the 9. It was hitting him in the open area of the 9. So it could not have been thrown any more perfectly, and he knew that. And I think he took his head up just enough for a glance to see, where am I getting pressure, and do I have enough, you know, room to tightrope down the sideline, or do I need to spin back to the inside of the field? Because he was going to try to score on that play. He wasn't just taking the first down. And, you know, he'll learn from that, I think. There might be times where you try to do too much, and I think that might have been one of them.
All right. Let's see. Next question. I know it's about the cornerbacks. He says, this is Ryan in Lakewood. Dan, what's up with Davion Shelton? He got burned like 4 times deep downfield. If it wasn't for his pass interference, it wasn't called, and he would have gave up 2 40-plus yard plays. The other one, of course, was a late touchdown. And he said, well, what happened to Chris Hawkins? Is he hurt? Not much was talked about him this summer. Did he just not impress? Coming off the recruitment, looked like he was a shutdown type one-on-one cornerback.
Well, I think the numbers game catches up with you a little. I mean, there are a lot of guys that they want to take a look at. And if, you know, and they have been shuffling them in and out. And I guess if you have a potential redshirt year, you may be the last guy that, you know, that they're going to take a look at. And, you know, you can understand that. We haven't seen much separation. And it's hard to evaluate the cornerbacks. I mean, we don't get to see them. We don't get to see the film. I think with the cornerbacks, you really need to see the film, the practice film every day. It probably doesn't look like there's, you know, a great, you know, deal of difference. Torrin Harris is certainly improved. He was closer to making plays. He tackled pretty well. So you got to like that. Tackling is a factor. Devian is a tough kid, and he is he's a physical kid. And he was even called out by name by Lane last night as an example of, you know, the backup kids have to be ready to play, and they have to be ready to make plays. And with 30 seconds left, and with, you know, Hawaii 60 yards away, duh, they ran a deep ball to a kid. That kid was a freshman. First time he'd ever been to a college football game in his life. He scores a 60-yard touchdown against USC. I mean, that stuff didn't happen. And it was pretty frustrating, I think, to Lane. And as they said, hey, they may have to step up this week because, you know, you wouldn't want to bet that Anthony Brown and Kevon Seymour are going to be back. So, you know, whether that means Josh Shaw moves or not, but yeah, you gotta have a sense of no matter what, I'm not going to get beat deep. No matter what, nothing, under no circumstances, with 30 seconds left, and this team hasn't scored a touchdown, I'm not going to get beat deep. And I know I don't have my starting front seven in there, all of them, so they may not get pressure on this kid, and he's gonna throw it deep, and the kid could throw the ball 70 yards. They're not going to run past me. And then I ran past him. We can't let that happen. And that's just, and he may be back out there this week. Devian's got, you know, he's got size. He's a big rangy kid and he's not afraid to hit you, but he's got to, you know, got to be smart. Got to, you know, have the technique, and you can't get beat deep on plays like that. You know, so the guy, you know, catches the ball for 30 yards. So what? You know, they got 15 seconds left to go 30 more yards. But to let yourself get beat deep, you just can't do that. I don't know that he got beat deep that many times. I don't think Hawaii really, you know, they did get some deep routes there where they were under pressure a little bit. It'll be interesting to see, you know, that, you know, here you go this week. I don't think Washington State runs a lot of that kind of stuff. Will they add some more of it? You know, they're more run underneath stuff, but you know, they'll throw the ball enough that, you know, they'll get plenty of work, and we'll have a much better idea about the corners after this week's game than last week's.
Certainly. All right, we got Lawrence in Dallas, Texas, had a couple questions. He was wondering what the new defensive coordinator Clancy Pendergast's thoughts were about the performance Thursday night, and then with Buck Allen and those late carries, it gave a spark with those late carries. Do you think his reps will increase? That's Lawrence in Dallas.
You know, I don't know. But the Buck Allen situation, he's been the, you know, that, you know, favorite stereotype, the kind of redheaded stepchild, you know, that just they don't talk much about him, and then he just every time, you know, he just goes out there and does it. I mean, and he carried him through fall practice on the days when he was literally the only one of six running backs who could play. And he hasn't not played. And he's made plays. He's run over people. He's fast. He catches the ball. I would love to see them use him, you know, more as a slot receiver. He catches the ball as naturally as anybody on the team. And I mean anybody on the team. Nobody catches the ball any better than he does. And I know that's saying a lot, and it's absolutely true. And he converts it, you know, catches and runs as well as anybody. And he is absolutely, you know, at 6'1" and two, you know, between 210, 215, and third or fourth fastest guy on the team. There has to be a place, you know, for Buck. So I'm a big Buck booster. As far as I'm trying to think, your first question, I jumped too much on the Buck question. Ryan, you have to help me here.
Oh, I'm
sorry. First question.
No, sorry about that. So the first part was Clancy Pendergast, his thoughts on the performance.
Oh, you know what? It's interesting. Clancy snuck out of there, and we won't get to talk to him until Tuesday, I guess. Is it Tuesday? No, Wednesday.
Yeah, I tried to grab him. He just left.
Until Wednesday. And Clancy is really a quiet guy, and he's not out there to, you know, I would tell you, I sat down with him for about an hour, and his thoughts are he wants him to play fast. He wants them to play on your side of the line of scrimmage. He wants them to communicate really well with one another so that they can do all those multiple things and everybody is playing off everybody else. And that looks like it's a complex thing where, you know, but if you communicate it well and it's interchangeable enough where the two safeties are interchangeable and they bring guys up to the line of scrimmage and all that, they didn't seem to have any of those communication problems at all. That they were really, and they really worked at it. And really, he's talked about communicating, and they seem to do that, you know, really well. I mean, one of the things that helps is they love playing this defense. They love being aggressive, being able to run to the football, being able to make plays. I mean, I think he would. If I had to guess, he would say, wow, they did pretty much what we wanted them to do. There were some breakdowns. We got some young guys out there. But in general, you know, they played hard. They played fast. They played on Hawaii's side in the line of scrimmage. They hit the quarterback. I mean, they're going after the quarterback. I mean, if you're a quarterback, say, in a game coming up, playing USC, and you watch that Hawaii film, you're thinking, ooh, this is going to be a long night. And I know Washington State's going to do some, you know, some really interesting things probably to protect Connor Halliday and to, you know, allow him to get rid of the ball quickly, because that is not a film you'd want to watch if you were an opposing quarterback. Because I know a lot of people, Graham, he wasn't that impressive to me. I thought he was kind of, you know, he missed some open throws, but I thought he was kind of impressive. He stayed in there. He's a big, tall, strong kid. I think he can have a pretty good year. I mean, I think there was a reason Ohio State recruited him, thought he was a classic, you know, big, strong-armed, drop-back guy. And I think this is the perfect second game to come up to see about this USC defense, to see how they adjust to the stuff that Mike Leach's guys are going to do that did pretty well at Auburn. They're going to throw the heck out of the ball, and it'll be a test of how athletic USC can be, how well they can run to the football, how well they can run to the quarterback, all those things that they seem like they've really, really worked on well. But we'll catch. We only get the defense one day a week, so that'll be Wednesday, And we'll try to talk to Clancy. But Clancy doesn't say much. He kind of lets his players do his talking. He's not a big talker. He just, you know, but it's an interesting combination. He's so quiet, so reserved, so kind of unemotional, and yet they certainly play with a lot of emotion. And you'll hear guys saying, man, I love this defense. I love Coach Pendergast. And yet it's so quiet around him. I mean, he's just, you know, an interesting, you know, way that he's got him playing one way, but that's not the way he is personally at all. He's very understated and, you know, soft-spoken and low-key.
Okay, I want to get to two quick ones before we let you go, Dan. David and OC. So it looked like Cody Kessler didn't make any audibles or check off at the line on any of the plays. It looked like he was forcing the play that was called in. Is this lack of experience, nerves, or maybe you just didn't see the coverage? What do you guys think?
Well, he made an audible 19-yard line for the touchdown, so he actually came up there, saw that defense, and immediately audible to it. I really don't understand. He had an awful lot of situations where basically, you know, they were throw the ball to, you know, one guy. I mean, it, you know, there weren't other options available. I think, you know, the emphasis was to try to run the play as called. They shouldn't have needed to run that many audibles. I thought, you know, they did it exactly right the one time. And I don't think it was it's lack of experience. He's and I feel bad for Cody, and I feel bad for you guys, because the quarterback you saw and the quarterback that Cody was in the game Thursday is not the quarterback we've seen all year. Now, where that came from, you know, we can make the case that, you know, that was Cody in his first game. Cody, you know, says to all the time, he said, I don't get nervous. I'm not a guy that gets, nothing's too big for me. I think he was put in a little bit of an offensive straitjacket. I mean, the stuff we were seeing him running, and not much of what we saw the 3 weeks that we were allowed to watch practice. It looked like, you know, he was slow walking, and the offense was slow walking, and they were being overly cautious and overly careful, and they can't play like that. And so I'm not going to put that on Cody. You know, we'll see. I mean, you still have to perform, but there were a lot of times where, I mean, you know, what do you do? You're in the end zone and you got this, you know, play call, and, you know, you just take 3 steps back, and it's like Stanford, you know, where boom, you're down, you know, your own guy knocks a Hawaii guy into you. That shouldn't happen. And that wasn't on Cody. A couple of throws, I was surprised. He made a couple of throws that we haven't seen him make all year. I mean, the screen pass, I was terribly executed. You know, nobody got anywhere. I mean, there wasn't a guy within 5 yards of where the screen was supposed to develop. I thought that was, again, an example of stuff they don't run enough in practice, so that when it comes to a game time, if they get, you know, bumped off their route, they don't go anywhere. But you know, how can you run a screen pass if you got nobody there? I mean, and I think what he saw, I'm not sure what he thought he saw. But you know, that can't happen. But I'm you know, more of the thinking that it was really a badly called game. I thought that the concepts were not geared to helping the quarterbacks. And I think they were designed to. They just didn't work that way.
And then one last one, Dan. Mike, about Pac-12 officiating, since we're going to have a Pac-12 game come up this week. He said, I heard Dan say several times Pac-12's officials are bad. Can you talk about this in more detail? Why are they so bad? There's something in how the Pac-12 trains them. Is there a officiating philosophy or practice that makes them different from other conferences? And that's Mike.
Well, I think for years you couldn't get into the Pac-12. They had very little motion, you know, very little movement in and out of the Pac-12. And I'm trying to think of who was talking about an NFL guy who was saying he went, you know, through LA area NFL guy who said, yeah, I gave up trying to be a Pac-12 guy because, like, you could never get in there. So he went Mountain West and right to the NFL, and a really good official, but because the Pac-12, you know, was kind of a political deal, and you know, once you got in, you know, there was nothing they could, you know, they could do for you. And now they fired 7 of those guys in Larry Scott's first year, but they still have, you know, a lot of the same guys. They call more penalties, obviously. I think 5 or 6 of the Pac-12 schools last year were in the bottom 10, and you know, from 110 to 120 in terms of penalties. So, and that's not where you want to be. The bottom 10 is not where you want to be. You know, they tend to be flag happy. when they show up at a bowl game, the other schools go, oh no, you know, we got the, you know, and they're going to be a, you know, a flag fest. They do seem, and the nervousness about the Pac-12 this year is because of the new targeting rule. They just seem to be not as strong as they are in other places, and that's not as, you know, in the SEC, they're going to call it the way they're going to call it. Now, they may protect the best teams. They may, you know, not care, but they're not afraid to do what they do. And the same way in the Big Ten, and having, you know, covered the SEC, having covered the Big Ten, the officials there look more confident than the Pac-12 officials. Pac-12 officials just don't make you have that feeling. They're getting better. They're getting younger. They know they've got a problem. They've had two different guys in here. One's at Mike Pryor, you'll see on Fox now with the officiating, with the top officiating consultant for the NFL, helped set him up. And then I'm trying to think of the name of the NFL guy who now runs the Pac-12 from an LA guy whose name escapes me at this moment. But they're trying to get better, and they're working at it. It's just taking a long time. I thought they would have gotten better quicker than they have. We'll see how this year goes. That was a Mountain West crew Thursday, and I think the general consensus for people there, and they made a few calls that, you know, you could tell they were Mountain West because they were trying to, you know, help Hawaii out just a little bit maybe, but they let them play. People were kind of like, wow, they're okay, they're letting them play. And that isn't ever the sense you get when it's a Pac-12 game. You don't get the sense of, ooh, they're letting them play. So that's where, you know, you talk about the Pac-12. They don't seem to be able to let them play. The Pac-12, for example, should not lead the nation in penalties every year, year after year after year after year, which it does. Now, they run a lot of plays. And games maybe are longer because of the kind of offenses that they run. And that maybe gives you more opportunity for pass interference and things like that. It just seems like it's a little – they don't let them play as much as they do in, say, the SEC or the big, you know, the Big Ten.
All right. Well, thanks, Dan. It was a long segment, but you know, it was a lot to get to with the Hawaii game. We were both out there. So thanks again for coming on the show, and we'll look forward to talking to you after Washington State.
We'll look forward to it. Yeah. Three straight home games couldn't come at a better time.
All right. Well, thanks, Dan, and everyone else. Thank you very much for tuning in to the Peristyle Podcast. Back again next week talking more USC football.
You've been listening to the Peristyle Podcast presented by USCFootball.com. Be sure to tune in next week for the latest news on Trojan football and recruiting. And don't forget, you can automatically download the podcast directly to your iPod or MP3 player for free. Just click the iTunes link on peristylepodcast.com or search for Peristyle Podcast at the iTunes Music Store.